buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison and Jace Brown joining you on a Victory Thursday. The Tennessee Volunteers are your SEC regular season champions. Feels pretty good to say that, Jace.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, coming into this year with a whole new crew and some old guys, wasn't really expecting the most, but, you know, they turned it into the most. So just really pleased to be in here on a Victory Thursday.
And we will talk about the Vols to open today's hour. Also, we'll dive into the baseball Vols. They're hot as well. Got to give them some credit. And as always, we'll give our best bets at the end of the hour. But I want to begin with this, and it's the Vols. They are SEC regular season champions. The University of Tennessee men's basketball team defeated the number 17/16, whatever you want to look at, South Carolina Gamecocks, 66-59 on its home court Saturday night to lock up the 11th SEC regular season championship in program history, including its sixth outright. Fifth-year guard Dalton Knecht led all scorers with 26 points for fourth-ranked Tennessee, who now improves to 24-6 and 14-3 in SEC play, which never trailed at a sold-out Colonial Life Arena on the way to, for the first time ever, defeating its third straight AP Top 25 foe in as many outings, including its second in a row on the road, which is also a program first. The triumph also marked the 100th SEC play ninth-year head coach Rick Barnes, who has guided the Volunteers to an SEC regular season crown in two of the last seven seasons, tied for the most of any team in that time. Let's begin with our takeaways of the game. And for me, you know, as we were talking about yesterday, me and Dawson, look, the games continue to get bigger and bigger. And, you know, we thought Saturday was the biggest game under Rick Barnes in the regular season. Well, actually ended up being last night, too. You have an opportunity to win the SEC championship in the regular season, which I think is a very impressive feat, more impressive than the tournament. The regular season is a three-month round robin, if you will. You get a shot at of teams on the road, you know, at home. It's a totally different thing than going and playing, you know, four games in a row in a neutral site. So winning the regular season championship is a big deal. I think the guys understood that. Zakai Ziegler was talking about it after the game. These guys were well aware of what was at stake, and these guys came in and made sure they made a statement early, which was one of my keys to the game yesterday, was come out and set the tone early, which you were able to do at Kentucky, able to do at Alabama. They were really able to do it again last night. And the second thing I was really impressed with, there were a couple times in the game where Tennessee would have a little bit of a cold stretch, right? Would struggle, about a three-minute, five-minute stretch, no field goals made. But Tennessee was able to follow each of those up with a big run. You saw an 11-2 run at the end of the half, and then you saw another run down the stretch of that second half to pull away. We got a little dicey late, but I think Tennessee did a really good job being able to respond to some scoring droughts, and we've seen in years past that's been something that Tennessee has sometimes struggled with. Yeah. So very good there. And then the third thing, I thought you did a really good job defensively.
Yes.
And especially on the perimeter, we'll dive more into it here in a minute. But perimeter defense was exceptional. Took guys like Talon Cooper and Michi Johnson out of that game, and the Vols were able to benefit from that greatly, taking those guys out, especially playing at home. Overall, a big win for the Vols. Very happy for them. And this is a team that now I think deserves a one seed. I don't think there's any doubt about it anymore.
Correct.
You rack up another quad one win. You're eighth now on the season. You have one more opportunity on Saturday against Kentucky. But this is a number one seed, and this is probably the best – team we've seen here in Tennessee.
Yes, completely. You know, takeaways from the game, of course, South Carolina is a really physical team. We've known that all year. They out-physicaled Tennessee on the road in Knoxville, so they were able to put it to the Vols. But, you know, Tennessee went on the road last night and out-physicaled them. I know they lost the rebounding margin there, but for the most part, Tennessee held their own down there. So I feel like that was a positive to take out there, besides a couple guys for South Carolina, especially Colin Murray Boyles. He had a big night down low, which kind of made Adu kind of look a little bit weak. But beyond that, the team looked really good on the interior. Again, hitting back on Adu, both him, Dalton Connect, and Zakai Ziegler all had really big nights, which is really good to see. We'll get into them later as well. Again, going back to the interior side of it, I felt like the defense on the rebounding was not that great. I think South Carolina had a big margin in the second chance points. I think at one point it was like 15-3 for them. That was one thing that kind of scared me and really kept the Gamecocks in this one. And, you know, the -2 margin for the Vols in that category didn't really tell the story of the game. I felt like down low, sometimes Adu was getting out physical. Sometimes he'd go up and get the first thing that comes off the rim. So just kind of ebbs and flows throughout the game in that department as well was something. And, you know, it was a big road win in a tough environment. I know Columbia was hopping knowing that they could still have a chance at a share at the SEC title for the first time in quite some time. And Lamont Paris, who I think should be National Coach of the Year, put together a pretty good game plan and kept the Gamecocks in it for the most part. So that was big for them as well. And like you said, William, they limited Michi Johnson. I think that was the biggest takeaway for me. I think he was like 0-for from 3. I'm not sure how many shots he put up from 3. Let me pull it up. I think he was 0-of-7 from 3. That's a big-time clip to hold him to, especially after coming off a big 25-point night against Florida, I believe. So being able to corral him in and not let the guards overtake this game, which we'll talk about here in a minute, that was really big for the Vols' win last night.
Yes, it was. And we'll have Jordan Moore join us here in a minute, having a little bit of a technical difficulty, but he'll also help us break down this game here in a minute. Tennessee shot 5 of 11, 45.5% from 3 in the opening 20 minutes, including Dalton Connect hitting his first four attempts, while the Gamecocks started off to a tough 4 of 17 from behind the arc. Mm. The Vols scored 8 straight points, half on a four-point play by Connect, his and the team's second of the year to go up by a game-best 14 points in the second half, 48-34, with 9:40 to play. As I mentioned in the introduction, a lot of runs in this game from the Vols. How impressive were those runs?
Pretty impressive and really crucial because, like you said, there were dry spouts for Tennessee as well where they would go 4 or 5 minutes without a bucket and are just clinging to life while it felt like those are the points where South Carolina is really starting to chip in, whether they were getting it down to, I think, as low as 3 late, maybe even 2 late. So being able to overcome that with runs of your own and really take control, especially at the end of the first half, going up 11 before the half was so big for momentum for the Vols. It's really unexplainable because, I mean, that first half felt really back and forth between the two teams. And for Zakai Ziegler and Dalton Connect to really start taking over late in that first half, that was really big. I still remember I was at the baseball game last night seeing the Zakai Ziegler baseline jumper that put the Vols up with about 2 seconds left, put them up by 11. So I felt like that was really big. Again, it just came at really timely points in this one where it felt like South Carolina was really about to take over this one, but just couldn't quite get over the hump.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Tennessee has something they've been so good at this season is responding to adversity. And, early on in the year, you know, we saw Zakai Ziegler. He was a guy that was struggling. He's able to respond and put together a really good calendar year of basketball in 2024. Three-point defense was something that was struggling at times as well. Mm-hmm. I think over the course of the SEC play, you've gotten better at that too. Notoriously, these Tennessee teams have struggled going cold. Like, they'll go cold during these stretches. It knocked us out of the tournament last year, right?
Yes, yeah.
And you had a couple of instances of that early on in the season. But now you've seen multiple instances now, even if you're going cold, they still have the opportunity to get hot and find that confidence. And last night was another example.
Yeah.
Dawn Connect, who scored 25-plus for the ninth time in the last 16 games and the 10th time this season, finished 5 of 11 on three-pointers and 3 of 3 at the line. Junior forward Jonas Adu finished just shy of a double-double, tallying 14 points and a team-best 9 rebounds. Ziegler scored 13 points and paced all players with 7 assists in the championship clinching win. Takeaways from the Vols' big three, as I'm now calling them.
You know, if you needed three guys to show up for this Tennessee team last night to clinch an SEC title, I would have picked every single one of those three guys just because they play three different levels. You know, Zakai's been your big guy on defense up front, up top, and the facilitator, and can score at that too. Of course, Dalton Connect being your main source of offense whenever you need him to, and Adu taking down the interior on both ends as well. I felt like all three of those facets of the game were pretty controlled for the most part, bar some oddities, like I was saying earlier about Adu. He had some hit or misses on the rebounding side of things, but for the most part, all three of those guys really showed up and showed out again. It really felt like a sleepy or a sneaky 26 points from Dalton Connect last night. I felt like if anybody would have scored that much, it felt like Zakai Ziegler. Every time you needed a bucket, Zakai was hitting it for the Vols, and that was my biggest takeaway from him, was just his big playability has grown so much over the last calendar year. It's insane. Like you said, he's had an incredible 2023-24 season. It's taken a next step over these last couple weeks in SEC play. I'm really excited to see them coming up Saturday, because those three are going to want to play big once again, especially whenever it comes to playing a really good Kentucky team.
Yeah. So technical difficulties have been fixed. Let's bring in Jordan Moore now. And Jordan Moore will join us. And Jordan, what are your takeaways? Sorry for the delay. What are your takeaways from last night?
Hey, no worries, guys. I mean, my takeaways, you know, obviously the big one is SEC champions. It's great to say, great for the program, incredible accomplishment for the team and for Rick Barnes, first time since 2008, outright SEC champions. South Carolina didn't make it easy, you know. It was a battle. It felt like, you know, a Tennessee game from last season, where, you know, defense, physicality. But Tennessee had the better player on the court, and they pretty much had the best player on the court all year long, and that was the difference maker, in my opinion, at the end of the day. Is, you know, in a lot of these games, we have Dalton Connect and the other team doesn't.
Yeah.
And he comes up in big moments. You know, you guys were going over, you know, the shot charts and everything, and my biggest takeaway, and, you know, I said this to you earlier in the day, William, is you look at the shot charts, and, you know, we talked about that first matchup.
Yeah.
And we talked about how many easy shots we missed at the rim and how that hurt us.
Yeah.
Well, in this game, the same thing happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, 2 of 12.
We missed a lot of shots right around the rim. The difference, though, is in that first game, you only hit 5 threes and you shot right about 24% from 3.
Mm-hmm.
This one, you hit 7, you shot 33-34%.
Mm-hmm.
The first game you shot 12 for 20 from the free throw line. This one you shot 19 from 22.
Yeah.
That to me, that's kind of the story of the game, is, you know, you hit, you know, more threes. You win by 7 in the game, you hit 2 more threes,
mm-hmm.
and you get it done at the free throw line. Especially in crunch moments there at the end when South Carolina was kind of making their run. You had Zakai go to the free throw line a couple of times, Vescovi and Dalton, and they knocked him down.
Yeah.
And to me, that's kind of the difference there in the game of why Tennessee was able to go into Columbia and get the win and become SEC champions.
And on Twitter today, Jordan, you know, you alluded to Dalton Connect after the South Carolina game when they played at Tennessee, and how Connect stayed after shooting free throws after a rough performance. And last night, you know, hit a couple of big free throws. The team shot really well from the free throw line overall. And we were talking about, you know, it shows the type of player that Connect is and the mentality that he has. It's truly special that we get to cheer for that guy every night, because not only is he a great talent and a great player, he's got the right mentality of, you know, You lose at home and get embarrassed, honestly, at home against South Carolina. Yeah. Worst shooting performance of the season. Instead of hanging your head down and moping in the locker room, you get back out on the court and want to do something about it. And you saw last night that these guys knew what was at stake, and they wanted to do something about it. That's exactly what they did.
Yeah, you're 100% right. You know, that mindset that you're talking about with Dalton Connect, you know, to me, I feel like it's a rarity in today's sports world.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people have that work ethic. Not a lot of people have that mentality of, you know, I'm going to outwork you. And, you know, thankfully, as a Tennessee fan and as people who, you know, cover the program and watch the program, you know, we're thankful that we have that type of player to be able to watch,
yeah,
you know, every game. And you know, not only that, but that bleeds into the rest of the team. You know, one thing about that night also, it wasn't just Connect that came out there and did that. It was Meshack. It was Josiah. You know, that type of work ethic bleeds into the rest of his teammates. They see how hard he works, and they want to work just as hard. They all want the same thing. And you see the camaraderie on this team and the love these players have for each other. And you know, they know how much Dalton works at this and how much he wants this, and they want to be able to work just as hard because they all want the same thing.
Yeah.
And to me, that was, you know, like you mentioned, that was a big thing to me, is that was a rough free throw shooting. You know, he shot 3 of 8. And he knew, I mean, you could tell at the end of that game, he knew he was letting his team down. He was letting himself down, and he knew that. And that's why he came back out there to shoot those free throws. And for him, in that environment against the same team, that's just big to me. You do it. You come back and you're in an environment, hostile environment, on the road against the exact same team that you missed those free throws against, with ACC championship on the line, and you step to the free throw line and you knock the ones that you were there down. That's big. That builds momentum for him. You know, that's positive for the team to see that, and it lets them know, hey, hard work does pay off.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk about the South Carolina guards, because coming in, you knew the assignment was going to be taking these guys out, and junior guard Michi Johnson paced South Carolina with 18 points, but Tennessee held him without a made three-pointer on 7 attempts. Freshman forward Colin Murray Boyles logged 11 points and a game-best 11 rebounds, along with a game-high 3 blocks. Graduate student guard Talon Cooper, a guy we talked about yesterday, only had 11 points and 8 boards, struggling from the three-point line for a majority of the game. Got hot a little bit late, but overall, Tennessee did a really good job taking out South Carolina's guards. Jordan, we'll begin with you. How were the Vols able to do that?
To me, you know, the last game in Thompson Bond Arena, South Carolina was able to do a lot of dribble drive stuff to get in the paint and be able to kick out. And, you know, the stat that I've seen at you, and as you mentioned on the show, we gave up 8 open look threes in that game because of their penetration into the paint and us collapsing and being able to kick out. And it kind of felt like to me early in that game that it was, you know, don't help off as much when they drive at the beginning of that game. You know, make them shoot twos. Don't let them come to, you know, don't let them do what they did to you, which is shoot 34% from three when you met them the first time.
Yeah.
And a lot of help defense, a lot of getting into gaps, cutting them off and able to really get downhill, but still being able to get out and kind of close out a little bit and get your hand in the shooter's face. And also just knowing your matchups, knowing who's the good 3-point shooters, knowing who you want to take those shots. It's all about the scout and knowing the tendencies of the other opponents. I will say there in the second half, though, I kind of got a little worried because their guards started breaking down our guards and getting into the paint and getting to the free throw line, and that allowed them to go on their run. And that you know, that kind of started worrying me a little bit that, hey, maybe they kind of figured something out. But Tennessee was able to settle back down and play team defense and you know, make them into a jump shooting team. There was a stretch in that second half, I think for about a 4 or 5 minute stretch, that South Carolina wasn't a jump shooting team anymore. They were getting to the rim.
Yeah.
And then Tennessee was able to get into a TV timeout, correct those things, get the matchups back to where they wanted them, and then they kind of shut the water off on them after that point and made them a jump shooting team once again.
Yeah, I felt like the defensive guys on the perimeter trailed them really well. Like you said, allowed some drives in the paint and really didn't worry about them getting to the paint, only because the three-point threat is still there, and that's what killed you last game. I felt like they did a really good job at that. I felt Vescovy was all over the floor last night. I know he had 2 steals. I think that might be tied for the team lead in steals. Yes, I think that is correct. But so him being out there – making his presence known on the perimeter was really nice to see, along with, of course, Ziegler being out there as well. But you pretty much hit on it. I mean, you took out their main source of offense that killed you last game, even though you sort of played down in pace a little bit. South Carolina likes to numb you down, take up some clock and keep you in a low-scoring game where they can fight with you. And you went out and won that game in that way. So I think that was probably the most impressive thing for me on the defensive takeaways.
Yeah, both teams shot under 39% from the floor, but Tennessee went 7 of 20, and that's 35% from deep, and conceded just an 8 of 29, 27.6% mark on the other end. The victors also shot 19 of 22 from the stripe, and that's 86% compared to 5 of 10 for South Carolina. This now, guys, is the second time the Vols have held back-to-back teams. Not the second time. The Vols have now held back-to-back teams to under 28% shooting from three. Jordan, you remember this as well as anyone. You know, early on in the year, we were talking about the open shot three struggling at times, especially on the road defending the three-point shot. We saw, Georgia come out and shoot 14. You know, Vanderbilt, a team that shoots well under 30% on the season average, was able to make a lot of threes at home as well. Now, in two different outings, you've gone on the road, and one of them was one of the top three-point shooting teams in the country. You've held two teams now in a row under 28% shooting from three. Has this Vols team now established themselves as a great perimeter defensive team despite early season struggles?
Yeah, I think they have. I was actually looking today, and it was something that I meant to see you earlier, William, is I was looking at shot quality. Shot quality has Tennessee as the number one three-point defense in the country as far as the quality of looks that their opponents get.
Wow.
So Tennessee is allowing low-quality three-point shots from their opponents. So, yes, Tennessee has definitely figure something out with their defense and figured out how to quit allowing so many open looks.
Yeah.
As I said earlier, they're for a stretch there from that South Carolina game on. Teams were shooting really hot against us. I mean, we saw it against Texas A&M. You saw it a little bit against Georgia.
Yeah.
And we were allowing, too many open look threes that we're kind of used to with a Tennessee defense. And the coach staff kind of got back in the film room, figured out, what was going on, why were we allowing this many open look threes. And here over the past few weeks, if you go kind of look at the analytics and stuff, Tennessee has kind of figured out what they were doing wrong and have been able to kind of, like I said earlier, come back in and kind of shut the water off on these offenses and not allow them to get open looks, keep hands in faces. And another thing that does with it too is even when some teams have gotten some open looks, the key is too is when you allow an open look, you don't want to allow an open look to a good shooter. Tennessee here recently has not allowed open looks to good shooters.
Yeah.
They're allowing open looks. They're going off the scattering report, and they're allowing open looks to the other team's bad shooters.
Yeah.
And that's just the players buying into the scattering report, understanding what's going on in the film room, the coaches understanding, the scout of who do we want to take these shots, who do we not want to take these shots. And Tennessee's just kind of buckled down here these last couple of weeks and has really turned the defense up. And to me, that kind of gives me even more confidence in this team heading into the NCAA tournament is they're for a stretch. Our offense was clicking, but our defense was kind of starting to fall back some.
Mm-hmm.
But since this tough stretch has started, really since the Texas A&M game, the defense has come back, and it's come back to an elite level. And they're playing elite defense right now, and their offense with this elite defense is what can get this team to go on a really deep run of march.
Yeah, it feels like this team has cemented themselves as a really great perimeter defensive. Like you said, giving up the worst shot quality from beyond the arc. That's pretty big. Over these last few games, they found some momentum there. I think that's one thing, like you said, Jordan, big rolling into the NCAA tournament coming up. I mean, you're going to get the double bye in the SEC tournament, but, who really cares about that? You've put together the body of work of an SEC regular season title. So looking into the NCAA tournament, that's a really big thing to keep lookout on. I think it'll be more impressive if they can keep up with or keep close to that clip, especially against this Kentucky team who, started raining them against us up in Rupp, but thankfully we were able to outpace them and play their method of basketball and still win that one. So I think they are – they passed the eye test, I guess that's what I'll say. And by your numbers, they passed the numbers test too. So on the up and up for the defense that, like you said, that Texas A&M game really scared me a little bit, but they've put those worries to rest for me.
Yeah, I think it goes back to just how this team is able to respond to adversity. You've seen it all season long, whether it be early season on, guys trying to figure out where they fit on this team. You know, you struggle with three-point defense on the road in a lot of instances early on in SEC play. You struggle with, at least last season, a little bit early on in the year, going through those cold stretches where you're not able to get any buckets offensively. But we've seen this team continue to grow throughout the year. By SEC play, the guys had figured out their role on this team. You know, after a couple of instances on the road of allowing inferior opponents like Georgia, Vanderbilt, and A&M to shoot a high clip from the three-point line, you've been able to now, against better teams, South Carolina, Alabama, better teams, be able to defend them a lot better than you were against inferior opponents. And also, we saw last night two examples of being able to go on a run after being on a cold streak. And also, coming from behind as well. It's something that Tennessee has struggled with in years past. You saw it against Auburn. You saw it against Alabama. You're able to come back in both of those games and win. I think this team continues to learn each week more and more about themselves, and they're able to adapt and able to overcome those issues and fix them as the season has gone on. I think you saw it once again last night. Now, talking about this team as a whole going forward, because we all know what is looming here in about another Sunday, and that's Selection Sunday. The Vols are now slated as a one seed by Joe Lenardi over Arizona after the win last night. Is this deserved? I will go ahead and say it is. You know, I talked about it on my podcast this week. I think this team deserves to be the number one seed. When you look at the resume, Tennessee last night just picked up their eighth quad one win. That's more than Arizona. Arizona also has three losses in the combined quad two and quad three. Tennessee only has one. And also, when you look at the combined rankings of the teams that Arizona has lost to compared to Tennessee's, there's about 150 ranking difference. Tennessee's six losses equal one of Arizona's losses. That's Oregon State. And Arizona lost a couple really bad games early on in Pac-12 play. Tennessee lost a Mississippi State team that's a bubble team. They're a respectable group. And then the loss to South Carolina at home was a tough one. But Tennessee, I think when you look up and down their resume, the teams they've lost to are good basketball teams. And those games were early on in the season as well. And I also think you should look at where the teams that Arizona, you know, their best wins, where are they now? Florida Atlantic's one of their best wins. They're a bubble team right now.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the year, they weren't, but now they are. I think it says a lot about how good that team actually was. Purdue, Kansas, Illinois,
North
UNC,
Carolina.
Those teams are still good. So I think it says a lot about Tennessee's strength of schedule and how this team has continued to get better. I think this is a one seed. Jordan, what do you say?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I thought Tennessee was a one seed before last night.
Yes, I agree too. Yes, I agree.
And you know, you broke it down perfectly. You look at, you know, even look at some of Arizona's wins. You know, they beat Wisconsin. Well, we beat Wisconsin at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You know, they beat Alabama. We beat Alabama twice. You know, we went to Alabama and beat Alabama.
Yep.
They got Alabama on basically a semi home court in Arizona.
Yeah.
Tennessee has the better wins. And I hate to say better losses. I don't like that phrase.
I don't either, but it's true.
Tennessee has the better losses.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we outside the Texas A&M game at Texas A&M, we really don't have, you know, a quote-unquote bad loss.
No.
You know, you lost to a Mississippi State team on the road, first game, you know, in the SEC, or second game in the SEC play, and, you know, Mississippi State's going to make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
You know, you lost to South Carolina at home. South Carolina's a good basketball team.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be a 4 or 5 seed. Really, the only really bad loss you have is Texas A&M, and they're still top 60 in KenPom.
Yeah,
and you look at, you know, Oregon State and Stanford, who Arizona has lost to. Yeah, to me, Tennessee's a one seed, and it should be it should already be solidified regardless of what happens Saturday, in my opinion. But I think the committee is going to, you know, if Tennessee loses Saturday, I think the committee will knock them back down to a 2. Unfortunately,
yes.
I don't think that'd be fair. I don't think that'd be right. But I want Tennessee to get to one seed. I know there's been a lot of talk on the airwaves about, would you rather be a 2 in the South or a 1 in the West? I want the one seed. Give me the one seed. Tennessee's never been a one seed. It's another chip mark for Rick Barnes' resume at Tennessee. And, you know, the percentages show, as a one seed, you have a much higher chance to make a run in the NCAA tournament as a one seed than you do a two seed. Give me the one seed all day long.
Yeah,
yeah. I think the one seed, switch that they had came about a week too late. Like y'all said, the resume that Tennessee has put together this year, up and down, has in my eyes been leagues better than Arizona. Yeah, they beat Alabama, sure, but you know, in a really weak Pac-12, you're not going, you're not playing every week. Teams like a South Carolina or a Florida. Or in Alabama every once in a while, and in Auburn. I think whenever you compare that with what Arizona's had on their plate, I think it's night and day. Tennessee should have had it last week, if not a little bit earlier. And like you said, Jordan, it does feel like this committee will have Arizona in mind if Tennessee does lose on Saturday and clink them back up to the one seed. But I think regardless, Tennessee should be cemented up there. I just think if they want to take it a step further and be sure of it, you win a big one at TBA on Saturday.
And real quick before we hit a break, I think the other big thing about the one seed is that you don't have to be in a bracket or a region, that is, with a Houston or a UConn. I think your most likely draw would have been Houston if mm-hmm. you weren't in the Arizona one. But Houston's a very good basketball team. That could derail a chance to a Final Four. Now, Arizona, I think if you get them as a two seed or a one seed, I think it's a winnable slate. But I don't want to have the question of going into Selection Sunday, are we going to get the two seed in Arizona's bracket or the two seed in Houston's bracket? I want to know that I'm the one seed and we'll have most likely Arizona or a team that we have already matched up against, like a UNC or Kansas. Yeah. So I want that one seed not only for the pedigree of having the one seed, I also want it for the competitive advantage because, as Jordan said, you know, statistically the one seed is your best path,
right?
Numbers wise, and there's a reason why they give the best teams in the country the one seeds, because you play the 16, you play a bubble team the next one, and then you go on from there. So I think the one seed's very, very important, and it's very important to the Vols making it to the Final Four in Arizona. Jordan, we thank you so much for joining us. Anything else you want to add?
One quick thing I want to add before you guys go is, you know, one thing I want to point out that I think is very underrated about these last two wins, brought this up to you earlier, William, is the way the different styles Tennessee had to have won these basketball games.
Sure.
That's big come the NCAA tournament when you face different variants of teams. You could face an up-tempo team, a slow-down team. Tennessee just beat the number one tempo team in the conference and top 10 tempo team in America, the number one scoring team in America, in Alabama.
Yeah.
They kind of played that style. And then a few days later, played one of the slowest teams in America at a slow pace, and who's, I think, 256 in points per game.
Yeah.
And Tennessee was able to get into a defensive battle and win that game.
Yeah.
That is absolutely massive and should give every Tennessee fan confidence that this team can go in the NCAA tournament and win any type of game, any type of way, because if you want to go to the Final Four or you want to go to a national championship, you have to find and be able to win games in different type of ways.
Yep, you said it great right there. Jordan, thank you so much for joining us, man. We always appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Have a good day, guys.
All right, you as well. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about the Diamond Vols staying hot at home. We'll be right back here on Overtime.
Just wasn't up to par. Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive, Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Are you tired of the same boring workouts that don't get you the results that you want? Check out HotWorks. With infrared light therapy and personalized wellness options, you'll be able to get the perfect workout every time. With the hot yoga or any of the other isometric options at HotWorks, you'll feel the detoxification right away. Hop on over to 10839 Hardin Valley Road or visit any of the other Knoxville locations to get started on your personalized journey.
Your tax refund belongs to you, not an identity thief. Over $6 billion in tax refunds were flagged by the IRS for possible identity theft last year. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. They monitor and alert you to identity threats you'd miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become a victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve your identity theft issue. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Let LifeLock help protect your financial info, so all you have to worry about is what you do with your tax refund. Go to LifeLock.com, save up to 25% off your first year. The promo code is HERD, promo code H-E-R-D, to save up to 25% off your first year. LifeLock.com. Identity theft protection starts here.
Back here on Overtime. Time to talk about the Diamond Vols, because they've been as hot as the basketball Vols. We appreciate you listening along with us here on Fan Run Radio, Fox Sports Knoxville. Behind the board tonight, a little bit of a new thing for me. I'm trying to figure out as we go. We appreciate Dawson for all he does. He's out tonight at the Lady Vols game, as he's a part of the pep band.
Yeah.
So
we got a front row seat for that one.
Yeah, yeah. Safe travels to him, and I know he's having fun. But you learn how hard this stuff is when you get behind the desk and start doing it. So I appreciate
that. Especially double timing for
you. Yeah. I'll tell you what. All right, let's move over to the Diamond, where the Vols are staying hot despite a slow night at the plate. Number 7, Tennessee, found a way to keep its winning streak alive with a hard-fought 2-1 victory over Southern Indiana. These guys are the Screaming Eagles. That's their
pride of the OVC, baby.
There we go. on Wednesday evening at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. Pitching carried the night for the Volunteers, who won their 12th straight game to improve to 13-1 on the year. The lefty duo of Xander Sechrist and Kirby Connell were lights out, combining to strike out 14 batters in 8.5 innings of work while allowing just a single run. Sechrist got the night started and posted career highs in innings pitched with 5.2 and strikeouts with 10. 10 Ks for Sechrist. While holding the Screaming Eagles to one run on 5 hits before handing the ball off to freshman Derek Schaefer with 2 outs in the 6th inning. Schaefer retired the only batter he faced to end the frame and picked up his first career win as the Big Orange scored a pair of runs in the next half inning to take a 2-1 lead. And it was all Connell from there on out, as the veteran left-hander did not allow a hit and struck out 4 batters over 3 shutout innings to slam the door and record his first save since 2021. SEMO, Christian Moore, sparked UST's offense with a solo home run to tie the game in the bottom of the 6th and finished with 2 hits on the night. Don Bargo drove in the game-winning run with a sacrifice fly later in the frame, scoring Blake Burke on the play after he reached on a single earlier in the inning. Kavaris Tears was the only other Vol to finish with multiple hits, going 2-for-3. What a nice start to the season he's had. Mm-hmm. And really just went on from there. A big win for the Vols. We'll begin with you, Jace, your takeaways from the win.
Yeah, so, you're looking at this score 2-1 against a Southern Indiana team who's pretty new to Division One as a whole, as a school, and you're like, man, why is this team that's, what, number 7, 8 in the country struggling in the midweek? I mean, this isn't really a new phenomenon for Tennessee baseball. I mean, you get up against a team who throws out some – slow, like low velocity fastball out there, and has got some loopy stuff to go with it. And this team does struggle with that kind of stuff. So I wouldn't be alarmed by that. Of course, you'd like for them to be a little bit more versatile, you know, being able to go up against the best arms in the country versus, you know, guys that are a little overlooked for the most part. So I think that's not something to be too worried about. Like you said, your veteran lefties went out and shoved last night. I know Sechrist gave up a home run, but that was pretty much the only big thing that he gave up. Had 10 strikeouts on the night. I know in the post-game presser, he said it felt like high school to him again. He went out there for a longer period than he's used to. We're used to seeing him in the midweek, like two innings, usually max, before going into the bullpen. But Coach Vitello put his trust in him, and he put it to work. He got 10 strikeouts, got queso for the crowd. That was big. Kirby Cannell came up huge. I know there were two late errors by the Vols, both by shortstops, I would say. I think the first one was against Curley while he was still in, and then Ariel Antigua got in the ninth inning, had an error of his own, which were the only two base runners he faced, and he was able to work around those mess-ups and was able to come out with a big-time midweek win for Tennessee. I found Christian Moore has still been the most consistent guy on the offense for Tennessee, in my opinion, coming up when you need him. And, you know, he went 2-for-4, still sitting around 400 on the year on the average. So seeing him continue to excel this far into the start of the season, it's pretty awesome to see. And let's see, he also was pretty big on the defensive end. Both him and Blake Burke played really well on the defensive end, clobbering up and taking up everything they could on the right side of the infield. So while the bats weren't too hot, you know, you rely on your veterans and you get the job done.
Yeah, you know, my takeaways are, look, it wasn't the offensive outing and explosion like you've had as of late. But I think that's good to kind of have a situation where, okay, we're not hitting our best balls right now. We're not playing our best offense. But we still find a way to win. And yes, it's Southern Indiana.
Yeah.
But it's just the opportunity to get that experience of, okay, we're not playing how we usually play. How do we find a way to win this game? And that's what they were able to do.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, folks, you know, there have been a lot of teams this season that have dropped some of these midweek matchups. It's very common in college baseball. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how good you are. We've seen, you know, Florida, Vanderbilt, Arkansas. I mean,
Wake Forest.
Yeah, you could go on and on of teams that have dropped midweek games this season, and that are much, much better than their opponent. So finding a way to win, I think, is a big thing. Even though you're not hitting the way you usually do, finding a way to come out of that and win the game. Even though you're not running up the scoreboard, I still think it's a good thing for the Vols. Get a little bit of experience early on in the season. Thanks to Christian Moore's solo shot in the bottom of the sixth inning, UT kept its streak of hitting at least one home run in every game this season alive. The Vols have hit 33 total homers through 14 games and ranked second nationally in long balls entering Wednesday's contest, just behind Duke, who has 35. I know this was not the best offensive performance,
right,
but just that stat alone, how awesome is this offense?
It's really good. I think top to bottom, you've got probably 1 through 15 of guys that can go out there and put you in a position to win a game. Along with that, you know, you're never out of any game. It felt like the life was sucked out of Lindsey Nelson last night after I think it was Ebest for Southern Indiana put one on the board for him. But
yes.
Simo came back first batter in the upcoming frame and put one out oppo, like deep oppo, like right field line oppo. I think him being able to go to all fields is just something that was really good for this team. I know Billy Amick didn't have the day of his life last night. I know he had a couple strikeouts, but I will say the umpire last night was not good either. He was really, really bad. Even everybody else in the press box was just kind of in awe of, you know, how wacky that dude's zone was. But being able to work around that, as well as different arms that you're not used to seeing at that velocity, was huge. Again, you can go 14, 15 deep in this roster, and whenever you find out who your mainstay guys are at all the positions, I think this team will really take that next step even beyond what they're at right now.
Yeah, and I think this offense is better than last year. I think you've got more explosiveness. I think Billy Amick coming in and being an instant impact despite being a transfer is a really big deal.
Yes.
Because he comes over from Clemson. You know what he was able to do there. But, you know, sometimes the portal doesn't always work. You know, Tyreek Key, for example, he was supposed to be a really big hit for the Vols. We thought he was going to be great, played well against Gonzaga in the scrimmage game, and then turned into the pump fake maestro. And I know that's just a basketball example, but you know what I mean. Coming out of the portal, it's very hit or miss, and we've seen a hit with the basketball team this year in Connect, and I think you've got another one with Billy Amick.
Yeah.
And we were on the phone yesterday with one of our callers, and they said, Amick kind of reminds me a little bit of Connect, you know, a guy that transfers in and becomes one of the star players and instant impact. And, you know, filling in for Denton, you know, didn't really know what you were going to get from Amick. And so far, he's been great. So I think he's been a big addition. And I think you've also had a couple of guys like Kavaris Tears come in who had sparing moments last year.
Playing now, really good.
Yeah, and now he's been a mainstay for this group. So I think this is a fun offense to watch. Yeah. And I know it's still playing Southern Indiana's and stuff like that, but you get an opportunity this weekend against Illinois, which will be a fun series. And I think what makes this offense different from years past, I think, that you still have the explosiveness off the bat in order to get those home runs. But I felt like last year's team at times was a little home run or bust.
Right.
It was, all right, are we going to get a home run? Are we going to strike out here? And there's not a lot of in between. I think this group does a better job of getting on base and hitting it in positions to where it's hard for the defense to get a stop. And I think that's one thing I've liked from this team so far this year offensively. Is the ability to get on base and not have to be so boom-bust out of a home run. What do you say?
I completely agree. I think a guy that lives up to that completely, that definition, is Blake Burke. I mean, this is a guy that's coming in looking to set the program home run record after two really solid seasons to start off his career at Tennessee. And this year he's sitting in the two hole. He's not sitting in the usual four hole. He's not striking out nearly as much as we've seen him strike out before, which is a big plus. And he's putting balls in play. It's not just, you know, let me go lift off one for 440 down the right field line. He'll take one to left center. He'll put a double off the wall. He'll put one through the shift last night. That was his lone hit. He hit it in between guys on the right side of the infield to squeak out a hit that ended up being the game-winning run for the Vols in that sixth inning. So I think his growth as a hitter, not to just be like a one-trick pony, has been huge for this offense. And I also think, going back to my point, bench potential has made it really big. I mean, like I said, you've got 14, 15 guys that can rotate in, especially with that pretty much revolving door that is the outfield right now, with guys like Inslee out there, Tears, Dreiling. We've seen Villeneuve out there. We've seen Dalton Bargo out there as well. So you've got guys that can go out there and make a play in the outfield and on the offensive side of the ball too. So I think that versatility that this team has, along with, you know, maybe a guy like Amick coming in, who was questionable on the defensive side but has, you know, been just fine there so far. I think the addition of his big bat and consistency compared to Denton has really stepped up this offense compared to last year's.
Yeah, most definitely, most definitely. All right, when we come back, we'll give our best bets of the night. Stay right here on Overtime.
Well, look no further than Knoxville Smiles. Our experienced team is here to give you the care and attention you deserve. From routine checkups and cleanings to advanced cosmetic treatments, we've got you covered. Say goodbye to dental worries and hello to a confident, radiant smile. Don't wait any longer. Schedule your appointment today and unlock the power of your smile. Call 865-539-1776 to schedule your appointment today, or just visit KnoxvilleSmiles.com.
Hey guys, it's Logan Quinton from the 920 Podcast and Fan Run Varsity Spotlight. Yes, it's the Cookie Man, and I'm here to tell you about something sweet. Crumbled Cookies is the fastest growing cookie company in the nation. After only 4 years, 500 plus stores are in operation in 50 states, with many more in build out. Just a reminder to go see the Crumble crew at Parkside Drive or Clinton Highway. And please, come check out the new location in Maryville, 1765 West Broadway, Suite C.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as a dollar a day.
All right, back here on Overtime, time for our best bets of the night. If you follow me on my Twitter and Twitter outlets, I post them all, or I guess before the show, and one of the games was already in action before we went on the air, and that was Pepperdine minus 10. That score is currently 62-13. So if you had Pepperdine minus 10, you tailed along. Yeah. That was one of my best bets of the night, Pepperdine minus 10. So that game is looking pretty good right now. I'm sorry that the game had to start so early, but yeah. That was one of my best bets of the night, Pepperdine minus 10. Go ahead with yours.
I'm going to go with Rutgers plus 9.5 on the road at Wisconsin. I think, of course, Rutgers defeated the Badgers at home earlier this year by 22 since Wisconsin has started slipping down and really not performing at what we saw, especially early in the season. So I think that could put – I think Rutgers could put Wisconsin closer to, if not on the bubble tonight, if they can go in and steal one from the Badgers. Wisconsin just sort of reeling here since the start of February. It's just been ugly to see them fall apart from what's a top six team in the AP poll or something like that. So to see them slip so far, I'm going to continue riding that wave, Rutgers plus 9.5.
All right, my next one, we head to the Pac-12 where there's a big game between Colorado and Oregon. Oregon pretty much on the inside out of the bubble, needs to probably win the Pac-12 championship in the tournament to make the big dance. But Colorado is a team that's currently on the right side of the bubble. However, I'm taking the Ducks tonight, minus 3, playing at home. Dana Altman is a coach that has built a steady program in the Pac-12. Earlier this season, became the 24th coach in D1 history to reach 750 career wins. And Jeremy Cuisinart has been one of the mainstays for this Ducks team. Redshirt senior guard ranks in the top 10 in Pac-12 scoring with 16 a night. Also averages 5 rebounds as well. Just dropped a 39-point performance, which was a career high for him in their last game. They're going to need another one from him tonight. I like the Ducks playing at home. Colorado's not been the same team on the road this season. They've been very good at home. But they've struggled on the road. I'm going to take the Ducks at minus 3.
I'm going to take – this is a weird one. I don't know too much about this one. I've got Purdue-Fort Wayne plus 4.5 against Oakland in the Horizon League quarterfinal championship tournament. Earlier this year, I think it was back in December, Purdue-Fort Worth took it to Oakland at Oakland, won by 21. And then Oakland, I think in the month of February, ended up beating Fort Worth – or is it Fort Wayne? There we go, Fort Wayne. Ended up defeating them at Fort Wayne by 8. So, I mean, this is kind of an iffy for me, but Fort Wayne has put together two solid back-to-back performances, including a first-round win over Robert Morris by about 15. So I'd like to see them keep rolling. Oakland's the one seed here, but Fort Wayne has proven their worth earlier this year. I think they can get it done.
Yeah, all right, those are our best bets of the night. Pepperdine, minus 10 for me. Kind of already in action here. Current score, 69-18.
Hit on that one.
Nice. And then Oregon, minus 3, your best bets.
Had Rutgers plus 9.5 and Purdue-Fort Wayne plus 4.5.
All right, so I want to ask you this, and I asked Dawson this yesterday. There's a poll on Twitter by Vol Report, and they asked 2 days ago, would you rather have Kennedy Chandler from March in 2022 or would you rather have Zakai Ziegler from 2024 on this roster? Who would you pick?
I'm going to say I'm probably going to roll with Ziegler here. I think, of course, Kennedy was really good on the offensive and defensive side. And, you know, Ziegler had a great defensive year that year as well. I think that's something that is not mentioned enough. Kennedy played really good. He was able to make shots when he needed them. But Zakai has been able to hit bigger shots, I think, in more clutch moments and has been I think, a better facilitator than Kennedy Chandler was while he was here. I think over his last, like, 10 or so games, he's averaging more than Kennedy did. I think he's put together more solid performances than Chandler did. He's been much more consistent, I think, is what I'm trying to get at. I think he is one of, if not the X factor for this team. Without him, I'm not sure if this team would go very far in March. We saw this team go to the Sweet 16 last year without him, but besides him, we don't really have that trusted guy. We've seen Gainey run the point a little bit, but hasn't wowed anybody from that so far. So just from his impact on both ends and the consistency that you see from him game in and game out, I'm probably riding with Ziegler here.
Yeah, I said Ziegler as well. Because I think Ziegler, he gives you more on the defensive end.
Right.
And he's a pest. And we saw it against Alabama, guarding Mark Sears, who's one of the best shooting guards in the country, was able to force him to take a lot of bad shots and have a bad night. Even last night, forced South Carolina to become uncomfortable. Mm. That impact goes farther than just the stat sheets.
Yeah.
And as a result of Ziegler getting those stops, you convert to offense by getting out in transition and getting that offense flowing. I think that's very big. Yeah. I think his playmaking ability was better than Chandler as well. Chandler was a better scorer by far,
yes,
very crafty.
Yeah.
And down the stretch, especially in March, Chandler was really, really good. But I think you've seen a consistency from Ziegler throughout the season in SEC play that he's consistently going to be your distributor and going to be your best defender each night. And I think his impact goes a lot farther than the highlights and the stat sheets that many people value a lot more than what you really see these guys, what you really see from Ziegler each night.
I think one thing, too, that not too many people mentioned, Kennedy Chandler was very inconsistent at the free throw line. Whenever you needed a bucket from there, it felt like he never came up with it. And so far this year and going into this postseason, Ziegler's been on it, especially going through last night. He didn't miss. Adu was the only player for Tennessee to miss any free throws, and he missed all three of them. So I think consistency there as well elevates him, too.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. All right, that's going to wrap up hour number one. Great stuff. When we come back in the second hour, we'll talk about the Bills. Had a garage sale yesterday. Plenty of guys on the move. We'll also talk about the Los Angeles Lakers. Stay right here on Overtime when we come back.